From the Lynn DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of August, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll discuss the commodity markets with Greg Johnson at TGM here in Champaign County. Ed Ossett will join us from the University of Minnesota. He's an agricultural economist. And we'll close out today's program by taking up the weather forecast, as usual, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled to $3.83 and a quarter, 5 and a half lower. December at $4.75, down 4 and a half, and the March at $4.18, 4 and a quarter lower. September beans down 8 and three quarters at $10.05 and a quarter. November at $10.18 and three quarters, down 8, and the January at $10.34 and three quarters, 8 and a half lower. Bean meal down $7. The bean oil $1.22 higher for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the December down 4 and a half cents at $5.62, the hard red December at $5.72 and a quarter, down 6 cents on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Greg Johnson. He is at TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being with us.
Good to be with you, Todd.
A little bit later in this program, we'll hear from Ed Ossett, and you and I talked about this just a moment ago, where Ed suggests that for new crop corn and wheat, both, that farmers might do this in order to try to capture some more premium out of it, which is to make new crop sales, particularly in Ed's case, he says, if they've already made new crop sales and they're satisfied with those, and to go ahead and make more new crop sales and then to try to capture the carry. And he did that by doing something in May or June. Can you explain what all of that means?
Yeah, it's called locking in the carry. And if you have bins, what a farmer can do is, instead of selling cash corn now for, let's say $3.80, you can sell March corn for $4.10 or July corn for $4.30. And so you can pick up an extra 30 cents cash by selling the corn, holding it in the bin, and then delivering it in March, or pick up an extra 50 cents by putting in the bin and selling it in July. Of course, you have to keep it in good condition. You lose the interest, you know, there's an interest charge as well, but you can pick up that carry. And it's different than putting in the bin and not selling the grain, because if you put it in the bin, even though the carry is there today, eventually in these big surplus markets, the carry tends to go away. So, if, for example, December corn is $4 today, March corn is $4.20, and July corn is $4.40. As time goes by, the March eventually goes down to $4. The July eventually goes down to $4. The carry goes away. So the only way to lock in that carry is to actually sell the deferred futures now. And that's easier said than done, because most farmers aren't real excited about these prices. I think that's why he was saying, if you've got some sales made already, you can probably afford to maybe tell yourself that you're taking a little bit less, and then average that in with the better sales that you made previously, and then lock in that carry and pick up a little bit more than what you could do for just selling cash corn.
Yeah, so there really aren't two transactions that are taking place here. It's just a matter of calling the elevator and saying, I want to deliver this many bushels and to make that sale.
Yes. And you may need to do it hedge to arrive. You may not want to lock in the basis yet, but you definitely need to get the futures locked in if you're going to lock in the carry. Basis levels tend to be kind of average at this point, and hopefully the demand will pick up and we'll see basis levels improve over time. So you can set the futures price now and then lock in the basis part of that later on. But either way, you could do it all at once, or you could do it in two separate transactions. But either way, getting the futures locked in is the important part to get that lock in that carry.
Well, let's walk through the second one. The first one's fairly easy. So you look forward and you see what your cash bid is, and you say, I'm going to deliver that. It's in your bin. You've got the carry captured in the marketplace. Before we get to the second set of transactions, what's the important part there? Because it's about how much it costs to carry in, and you're not making, for instance, a full 5 cents a month, if it's 5 cents a month carry, if you can look out and you can see that. It's about the difference between
what it cost you to carry and what the actual carry in the marketplace is.
Correct. Yeah. Interest on corn is about 2 cents a month. Interest on beans is about 6 cents a month. Interest on wheat is 3 cents a month. So that's your cost, your interest cost to carry that corn in the bin. And then there's some electricity and air and you know, you'll put a penny or two on that. But basically, the 5 cents a month that you can get in the carry in the market in corn, the 8 cents a month that you can get in beans, the 6 cents a month that you can get in carry in wheat should more than offset the interest and that small storage cost that you've got for putting it in the bin. So that's how the math works out.
Yeah, so every month you're picking up a couple, 2 or 3 cents a bushel as you're trying to get to a higher price.
Exactly. It's kind of the going back to the basics, what I call blocking and tackling. It's not real exciting marketing strategies, but if the market is not going to go up 30, 40, 50 cents at a time, then, 2 or 3 cents a month is better than nothing.
And the second strategy involves the futures market?
The second strategy says, most elevators just will give you an average basis bid right now for March delivery or for July delivery. But as we get closer to those months, the basis tends to get better. It tends to improve over time, at least somewhere. So what you can do now is lock in the futures part. And then if the basis is not as good as what you think it could be come March or come July, then you just wait and then shop it around again in March and July.
It means you have to hedge a part of your a coming crop then in the futures market.
Hedge the futures now and then lock in the basis later on. Yes.
So you're selling the futures.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. What do you think about the marketplace today?
It's kind of quiet, a little bit lower. Corn's 3 cents off contract lows. Beans are 8 cents off contract lows. So we're hovering around contract lows ahead of the USDA report next Monday. What little bit of news out today is a little negative. China's economy is a little bit worrisome. There was export numbers out, industrial export numbers out of China were up 7%, but the expectation was closer to 10%. So their economy is slowing down. They've liquidated a fair amount of herds. That's helped out of hog herds. That's helped their hog price over in China, but it's less overall hogs, which means less overall feed. We think that China may only import 107 or 108 million metric tons of beans this year. Last 2 years, they've imported 109, so 1 to 2 million metric tons less. That's 36 to 70 million bushels less. Not a big number, but obviously we'd love to see it be higher, still lower. The other thing is farmers are still holding on to a whole bunch of old crop corn, and I think the market still realizes that. That's weighing on the market. That's why we're sitting 3 cents off contract lows. We're hoping that maybe the USDA report on Monday will lower the acres, but even if they lower the acres by a million on 90 million acres, that's or on 180 bushel yield, a million acres is 180 million bushel drop. But they'll probably raise the yield by a bushel an acre on the 90 million acres. So you increase the yield by 90 million bushels, you increase or decrease the acres by 180 million. Net effect is you reduce the overall supply by about 90 million. That cuts your carryout down from 2.1 to 2.0. I'm not sure 2.0 gets the market excited. It's better than going to 2.2, but as I've always said, 2.0, 2.1, 2.2, anything with a 2 is too much.
On that, I was trying to come up with it's time to say to goodbye, but I guess, but anyway, it's time to go. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. Ed Usset, agricultural economist at University of Minnesota Extension, now joins us. Hi, Ed. Thank you for being with us today. I want to talk about some of the characters you use in your grain marketing books. Hank Holder, who just can't seem to sell a crop. There are quite a few farmers and others that have not sold a crop this year, and they're still hanging on.
There's a lot of Hanks out there, and I hate to bring them up. I hate to bring them up because it's late in the game. Just as a reminder to your listeners, Hank Holder is a guy with, he's got on-farm storage and he is a perennial bull. He's always certain there's another rally coming. So he hangs on to his crop for basically the entire year up and finally sells it because he needs the space for the crop he's about to harvest. So he holds it and sells it a week before harvest. And he breaks what I call the 11th commandment in marketing, which is that thou shalt not hold unpriced corn or soybeans bin after July 1. And there are a lot of sinners out there, Todd. There are a lot of sinners. Just to give you a thought on how much this has hurt. The harvest price for my friend Barney Binless a year ago, about $4.60 in corn, cash price. That's last year at harvest. Hank is heading towards a number now. I take into account storage costs, variable storage costs, interest on money, a little bit for shrink. Hank's heading for something around $3.50 a bushel, which is over a dollar a bushel, less than last year's harvest price, and 60 or 70 cents worse than he could have done at the end of May this year. In soybeans, my friend Barney Binless, selling at harvest a year ago, would have had about $12 beans. Hank is heading for something less than $9.50 a bushel. It's been a tough year for Hank. There are too many Hanks out there. The hardest part about Hank, Todd, is the son of a gun beats everybody 1 out of 5 or 6 years. But it's the other 4 to 5 years in his portfolio, like this year, we don't want to talk about. It's a tough year.
Yeah, so let's not talk about it anymore. but let's, because it's kind of a done deal, but let's look forward, because now we're starting with Hank Older's bottom of the marketplace at this point. Who knows whether there's more? And if Hank didn't sell last year's crop, he probably hasn't sold this year's crop for corn or soybeans either. What advice do you have in marketing it?
Well, I just recently went looking with the thought being we had such a terrible June crashing down, and it's continued to trickle lower in the last month. And I thought, well, maybe we're in for an early low, okay? I didn't find that. I mean, we've had early lows, and it'd be nice to think we could have it. But the years I looked at, we were just as likely to get a late low as an early low. So I'm not willing to say this is over by any means. That's too bad. I'd like to find the bullish angle. The only bullish angle I can find right now is that the funds are very, very short. There's a lot of sellers in this market playing this for going lower. And if we can find a bullish nugget, a bullish scare, and they feel the need to cover, that could put some life in. But you know what, Todd? I was saying the same thing 3 weeks ago, and the funds have been doing well. So it's a tough sell. The fundamentals, we've got a big crop report coming up on Monday. I'm not sure where that's going. I think the corn market, I believe the sense is we're going to raise the yield, but we're going to decrease the harvested acres. I don't see a big, I'm not anticipating a big change in production or ending stocks. If I look worldwide, the fundamentals on wheat and corn worldwide, take China out of the picture, are just, they're pretty good for corn and wheat, the carryout. If you look at the world wheat carryout relative to stocks without China, it's the fourth tightest year in 65 years. I mean, they got data going back to 1960. And you say, well, how can that be, Ed? How can we have such poor wheat prices? It's a similar story in corn. The problem is, who's holding those stocks? We are. Back in the worst year in wheat was 2007, U.S. stocks were very low. This year, we've almost got the world wheat stocks looking like 07 when we had $20 wheat in February of 08. But this year, our stacks are they're high in wheat, and they're very comfortable in corn. So the situation to me is not that urgent, but it is if you just look through U.S. glasses, because our carryouts are very comfortable.
So we wait, do we put it in the bin and wait, corn, soybeans?
We've got decent carries have come back into the wheat and corn markets. And if you were one of the smart ones who got some early sales off and are feeling good about them, I'd be very tempted to sell a carry, you know, hold the grain and sell a premium for May or July futures and make it that's a conservative move, but it protects a good start. If you price nothing, I'm certainly going to take a chance with some wheat in the bin. I don't know what's going to make it rally, Todd, but we're at low levels and we can hope for something.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Todd. I wish I had a better story to tell. I wish I did.
We all do. That's Ed Husson. He's an agricultural economist at the University of Minnesota. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check in on the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us again.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
It looks like we have an awfully good growing season here in the Corn Belt. Tell me about this cool weather we are having at the moment and what you see maybe for the rest of August.
Yeah, you know, the temperatures over these next two or three days, maybe four, in the northern plains and upper Midwest are going to be in the 60s and 70s, and you know, this is August the 7th, you know, so that's pretty darn good for a human being. Not so great for soybeans that like it a lot warmer than that, but it's only a short-term bout, and what it's really doing is giving these crops a nice little respite from the less ideal weather that has been present. But as we go through next week, the temperatures are going to turn right around and heat up again, and we're going to scatter showers and thunderstorms back across that region. So, you know, I don't see a whole lot of reason to be excited about any kind of negative impact on these crops out there. As long as we don't go into more cool weather, you know, for the majority of August, I think the soybeans have every chance in the world to finish out well. We do have a potential here for some dryness. I mean, it's August, for crying out loud. And when we start heating up, we're probably going to see the majority of the southwestern Corn Belt and soybean producing area to see accelerated drying. That's pretty normal for this time of the year. And with that said, I do expect some timely rain to occur. It's not going to be one of those Augusts where we just end up, you know, going bone dry and hot all the way through the end of the growing season. It's not going to be that way. The ridge of high pressure that's anticipated is going to be relatively weak at times. It'll be strong at times, too, but it's not going to be one of those steady burners, and we will likely see a good mix. And when I look at the soil moisture assessment that we do here, we did it yesterday, and, you know, from a historical perspective, the moisture profile across the majority of the Midwest is in really good shape for August the 6th, which was, you know, yesterday. And so even if we do manage to go through a 10-day period where we don't get much rain and it's pretty warm, I think these crops are going to be able to handle that really well. Obviously, there's going to be no negative impact on the corn crop. It's far enough along that it can handle it. Soybeans, the first week to week and a half of warm and dryish weather will probably benefit the crop more than hurt it, except in those few pockets that don't have the subsoil moisture. I think Ohio is still a little low on subsoil moisture. Certainly the Delta and immediate neighboring areas are still a bit too dry. And the Delta shouldn't get any rain through the weekend. And next week, it'll be erratic rains for them. So there's going to be a few areas that have issues. But the majority of this crop, I think, is still looking pretty good. and the weather through the end of the month is going to continue to alternate back and forth sufficiently enough to carry on a relatively good finish.
Well, let's look for areas that we do need to discuss. A short word on Canada, and is there any problem or issue that you see for the forthcoming crop in Brazil?
Yeah, in Canada, you know, we still have a broad area of very low soil moisture in the southern one-third to one-half of the Saskatchewan growing region, as well as southeastern and east central Alberta. This is almost the same area that was impacted by a serious drought last year. The difference is that this year we started off the year with abundant moisture. In fact, it rained enough to erase the drought monitor drought that was prevalent across the region, but that is going to be returning if we don't get better rains fairly soon. But the problem here in the prairies is that we got very warm and rainfall was very poor in July. And that was when a lot of that spring wheat and early canola was reproducing. And so we did cut yields. And it's still dry, so some of that late canola is probably suffering a bit as well. It's not as hot. Obviously, we just talked about it being cool across Canada and the northern U.S., and that certainly is helping to reduce the stress. But there's just not enough moisture there. And so a lot of that crop is going to be suffering. Now, soybeans and corn and flax that are produced in the eastern prairies, Manitoba and eastern Saskatchewan, still have a lot of potential to recover well if they can get some timely rain in August. Very similar to the U.S. Midwest, I think that the odds are fairly good that that will take place. Down in South America, you know, everybody's been talking about La Nina for how long? 6 months now? And where is it? It doesn't exist. And the Australian Bureau of Meteorology continues to suggest that we will not see La Nina event at all this calendar year, which I find interesting. My personal opinion is that we will tilt towards La Nina, but we may not go completely into a La Nina. So with that in mind, that sets the stage for South America to have a relatively good normal start to the rainy season. Right now, where it's very dry in Argentina, especially Cordoba and parts of Santa Fe and Santiago del Estero. And so some of those areas need a rain fairly quickly, especially as we come up on September. It's not a big deal for the next 2 or 3 weeks, but after that, it's going to be critically important to start improving that moisture profile. And as long as we're not going to go into a significant La Nina, Argentina has a fairly good chance for them to get out of the dryness, and I think they will.
All right. Hey, thanks much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org. The theme music for our program is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.